This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Dave Carson and Kaz Dubey are two professional guides in Zimbabwe. What that means is that they are ecotourism photographic guides. They are not professional hunters. Though, when they qualified as a professional guide, they had to do essentially everything that a professional hunter would have to do, i.e. both of these individuals had to shoot an elephant in their practicum to pass and get the rank of professional guide in Zimbabwe. So I wanted to have a conversation with both of these guys, specifically to discuss potential animosities between hunting and ecotourism. In Zimbabwe, they come out of the gate singing off the same sheet of music, but as they go through their various careers, things start to diverge, especially when there are companies that people work for that are clearly anti-hunting. And so I wanted to have this conversation with two people that are not professional hunters, do not live in the professional hunting field, and ask them their opinions about hunting. And I think you're going to really, really love the conversation. Specifically, the discussion around what is the central goal and purpose of non-consumptive and consumptive tourism. So enjoy. So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay? It's
fantastic. My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time. Hmm.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
Perfect. All good. Fantastic.
Kaz, you were born here around Vic Falls?
Yes, around Wangi? I was born in Wangi Town, 1981, coal mining town.
Yeah.
My dad was working for the coal mine. So I grew up there, educated there, and yes, I've always been in Wangi District all my life.
Were you there in this, and there's a very specific reason I'm asking this question, were you there like in 1998, 1999?
Correct. Yes.
Did you pick up a passport by a guy named by Michael Kroger?
A passport?
Uh-huh.
No.
When we were touring through Zimbabwe, when I was 22 years old, we did one of those like big camper tours, right? 18, 20 people, different countries. You've seen them, right? You guys know what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah, big time.
So we've gone Great Zimbabwe. We came in. We did Kruger. Came in Bight Bridge. Did Great Zimbabwe. And then from Great Zimbabwe were coming to Vic Falls, and we had to stop in Wangi to get beer.
Right.
And Michael was in, my brother, was in the front seat of the cab, and we all piled out to get beer, and his passport was on his lap. Didn't realize that at the time. Went on Vic Falls, all the bungee jumping, went, did the rescue, went back down to Bight Bridge. Right. Everyone pulled their passports out. Michael Kroger cannot produce his passport.
His passport. Left it in Wangi Town.
Left it in the ground in Wangi Town. And we literally just left him in the bus.
You're like, hey.
Just stay in the bus, crouch down. We all rolled in, passport, through the Zim border, get to the South African. Then he climbs out in the South African saying, here's my ID, South African ID. I lost my passport. Okay.
Right.
And he made it back in.
Jeepers.
Wow.
That's my story with Wangi Town.
Okay. Wow. Wow. He was lucky. I've had a similar experience this year, actually, with American clients coming from Boston, actually, where I'm actually going. So they stayed with us 5 nights, and then on the last day, they're leaving to go to another camp. And anyway, they actually left, and they didn't tell me that they lost the passport. So they got to the other camp, and then while they were there in Buluwe and Matopos, looking for the Rhino experience, and then sent me a message to say, hey, we cannot find the passport. And the guy was actually the tour leader.
Oh, geez. The tour leader's passport, not the guy from America.
No, no, he was he was also a guest, but he's the one who organized the whole trip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So he says, I'm missing my passport. Please check. And said, where exactly did you last see it? And then he couldn't remember.
Oh, man.
So we went everywhere looking for the passport and all that. And eventually we couldn't get the passport. So we had to organize for him to fly from Victoria Falls to go back to Harare, get to the U.S. Embassy.
Jeez.
Luckily, I spoke to Rob, our chairman, and then past chairman, and then he organized with his contacts there, and then he went into the embassy and got a new passport. Flies back to the States. I think
he finds his passport somewhere, doesn't he?
We actually found it in his bed in our camp. After searching everywhere.
Shit, man.
So I'm actually going to take it back.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Kaz Dubé, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast. We have a second guest, but we'll start with you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
What do you do? Who are you?
Right. Yes. So I'm a Zimbabwean, born in Wangi Town, relatively to a very, very poor background. You know, we used to walk to school barefoot. To us, it was normal. I mean, most of the African kids grew up like that in our generation. So you'd go to school barefoot in a cold winter day. In one case, sometimes it's frost. But to us, it was just normal. With a shirt, no jersey. Parents can't afford shoes, can't afford a jersey. You go there, you go to school, you do what you have to do, go back home. Normal life. So, yes, I went through all through the Zimbabwean education system, primary school, secondary school, and then immediately after secondary school, I went into motor mechanics. I did motor mechanics before I became a guide.
And this was in Wangi?
This was in Wangi, yes.
What was the options for you in terms of what you could do?
Usually, because Wangi Town is a coal mining town, it was always either going into the mining town or going into tourism. But tourism to us was something that was done in Victoria Falls. We're not very much exposed. I never went into Wangi National Park until I decided to become a guide.
Oh.
Although I was living right on the boundary. It was not something.
Are you interacting with wildlife at that time? Like, do you see wildlife? Do you see elephants? Do you see all things as you were a kid walking outside of the national park?
Yes. During weekends, actually, we would walk into the bush looking for birds. Walking the mountains, and then in the dry season, yes, we had contact with elephants that would come out of the park, but we're so fearful. So if someone says there's an elephant in that area, I mean, we just duck and dive, and to us, it was just dangerous. We didn't want to associate or interact with any wildlife. So as a career, you were looking into the normal coal mining setup where you can be an artisan and be like an electrician or a motor mechanic or be a school teacher, or go into the medical field, or those were kind of the...
So secondary school, just so that everyone understood, secondary school is high school here in Zimbabwe.
Correct.
Okay, so you finished high school, then it's like Where am I going to go?
Yes, where am I going to go?
And you chose motor mechanics.
I chose motor mechanics. But I used to see, growing up, as you say, you went through Wangi Town as a tourist. We used to see those vehicles coming from Victoria Falls, those nice safari vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
I had fondness for those vehicles. I used to feel or like to think that one day I want to drive a safari vehicle.
Mm.
I didn't know exactly what the drivers of the vehicles were safari guides.
Yeah.
I just thought they were just drivers. I just liked the shape of the safari vehicle, not
what you were doing.
Exactly what they were doing.
Mm.
So anyway, when I went into motor mechanics, my father met someone who was training to be a guide during a first aid course in Wangi Town. So in Wangi Town, where my father was working, they were, as a company policy, they used to train during the first aid courses because they were working in a dangerous area, mining. So there was someone who came from outside, a safari guide. It was a learner guide. So he was trying to prepare. In fact, they were trying to prepare to go and write for the exams.
Okay.
So they went and did the training course, first aid course, because it's a requirement. So while they were doing it, my father asked the person, why are you doing this course?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't work in the coal mine.
And I assume your father didn't understand that process either, right?
No, he didn't understand guiding at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, the person explains to my father that I'm doing this because I want to be a safari guide. So it's a requirement. And then at the time, I was still not yet I hadn't started my motor mechanics course yet. So after they'd interacted, my father came back from his training and said to me, look, there's a career called safari guiding. There's this person who we are training with and just told me about it. And it sounds exciting. Do you mind going to go and see the person and hear more about it? So I said, okay, fine. I mean, I just as a young person trying to please my father, I decided let me go and meet this person.
Sure.
So I went and met the person. And then he showed me actually a requirements written by ZPGA of how
you was it ZPGA at that time or ZP?
It was
ZPGA.
Yes, H with an H.
Yeah.
So gave me the requirements, told me about guiding, and with my affinity to the safari vehicles, it was very easy because I was like, okay, so these are the best people that drive those vehicles. So she talked me into it. It was a woman actually. Talked me into it, told me about it. And then I said, I think I like to do this. I want to explore more of this.
And when was
career.
That?
This was in 1998.
And you've been a safari guide.
Safari
guide is not the right term for who you are. You're a professional guide.
Professional guide. I've been a... Okay, so I know about this end of 1998. And then in 1999, I wrote actually to ZPGA to be a member so that I could get a study pack. So I wrote a letter, postal letter. There were no emails at those times. So I wrote a postal letter to them. I told them I would like to do this course and I would like to be a member. So, yes, they responded. Within a week, they responded and they sent me the requirements. So I paid the money. My dad gave me the money and we paid for the study pack. Those days, they had to send us study packs from Harare.
Mm.
And then I got the study packs through our postal office. And I started studying and I was just connected. Just like that. So I was doing two trainings at the same time. I was doing motor mechanics and then studying at home to become a guide. But I'd never been in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
So I then became a member of what they used to call the Wange Conservation Society. So that was my way to getting an experience into the bush.
Mm-hmm.
Because we couldn't afford to go on safari or to go into the lodges or we couldn't afford that. So when I became a member of Wange Conservation Society, that's when I became exposed because we had programs to go into the park to interact and all that stuff. So that was my first time to be in a national park through Wange Conservation Society. But when I had started now with ZPGA to study, to write my exams as a guide. So my first attempt was in 2000. So I studied the theory part, the whole of 99, and then I went in February 2000. I did not make it, and then I wrote again in October 2000. That's when I got my learner license. So I passed the October 2000 learner professional guide exams. October 2000, got my learner license in 2001.
How long did it take you to go from 2001 to get your professional license?
Yes, long journey. It took me 9 years.
So I'm curious now to know, because the thing that you said about elephants,
yes,
was when we heard about elephants,
yes,
we had to duck and dive.
Yes.
Now, based on my knowledge over the last 3 days, now you're forced in the next 9 years,
yes,
to actually shoot an elephant.
Correct. To be a professional guide, because now this is about safety. You're now going,
correct,
to be guiding people on a walking safari.
Yeah.
And you need to be calm in a situation where an elephant is angry and you have got 6 paying guests behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be calm and protected.
Mm-hmm.
So now you need to have that skill in your blood.
What, can you remember, let me ask this question,
yeah,
and I'll turn it, I want to get Dave in here.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you actually went up to an elephant? Like, because you were obviously super scared as a kid.
Yes.
Do you remember the first time that you got up close and personal and just was like, holy smokes, this is, I should not be here?
I tell you, my first, not my first elephant, it's like my first experience in the bush. When we went for this conservation society, I was put in a little dorm tent at Wangi National Park,
okay,
to sleep in there.
Yeah.
And I was given all the canned foodstuffs and all that. So I was sleeping in the tent and I had all my foodstuffs in there. And a small animal called a honey badger,
oh,
came
my
sniffing,
God,
around my tent. Mm. I didn't like the experience. I told myself, this is not for me. I was harassed by that little animal. First time in the bush ever. First night, there is a little honey badger.
And he wanted your food.
He wants my food, and I'm in that little tent by myself. And I told myself, I think I'm in the wrong place. So forget about an elephant. Just the honey badger, I decided I'm not going to continue.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Dave,
yeah,
Carlson, are, yeah, you a professional guide at this point?
Yes, I'm a professional guide in Zim. Yep,
how
qualified.
Were you a professional guide at this point when Kaz is going through the process?
Yes, I was.
In, yeah, the same place, or did you move around? Because you now operate in Wangi, right?
Yeah, I've always really been in Wangi. I have guided all over, and all over Africa, actually. But, yeah, I was qualified at that point. I qualified end of 95. So, yeah, I was, but I wasn't with Kaz on that. I think that initiative was through the colliery, was it not?
Which one?
The Wangi Conservation Society.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this was through the colliery. Yes,
yeah,
yes, yes,
yeah. It was a good,
yes,
really, really great initiative.
Yeah, it was.
And they funded quite a few things in the northern part of Wangi.
Yeah.
There was a lot happening in those days.
Yeah.
Dave Carlson, are you Zim, born and raised?
Yep. Born and raised Zimbabwean, from Bulawayo.
Always wanted to be in the wildlife, like every other young kid?
No, I'm a bit of a different case. I actually had no idea. I think just growing up, I actually was clueless as to where I was headed.
Really?
I just got lucky. I was very, very lucky.
Didn't want to be a game ranger?
No, I didn't even know. I came from town.
Okay.
I was from Bulawayo. You know, we lived in Bulawayo, and I went to boarding school, and I had friends with farms. I'd go out to the farms.
Where'd you go to boarding school?
I went to school in Bulawayo, and then I ended up in South Africa, Pietersburg, which,
yeah,
is now Polokwane. I got a scholarship for swimming and ended up there. Yeah.
I thought your physique looked like a swimmer's physique.
Yeah, it might have been. it slipped a little.
So how did you get into the wildlife field if you were, like, as you said, you just happened upon it?
Yeah, actually, to be honest, excuse me, what it was is my mother's friend. You know, I finished school. Let me just go back. I finished my secondary schooling, high school, I declared to my mother that that was enough. This whole enforced education.
No university was in my future.
That's a negative, Ghost Rider. I was like, I need to go be a farmer. I decided that would get me out of town. I'm going to be a farmer. Anyway, she said, okay, I've got a friend who's got a farm. It's in the Gwai. Which I didn't know where that was. but I was sent, got picked up, taken there. I was aged just, I think I was 19 or something like that. Dropped off at this farmhouse. Chap by the name of Orby Chatham was like, okay, We're not really farming much here, but we do a bit of wildlife. So I thought, okay, that's fine. And he said, but down the road, they're building a safari camp. There's a guy by the name of Ron White. Didn't know who that was either. So the next morning, I was dropped off there. I was given a little tent just like Kaz. I was just from town. I was like, okay, I met this guy, strong honey badger type of person. He just mentioned honey badgers.
Yeah.
Ron White, and he had 30 staff there, and they all spoke fluent Ndebele. I spoke English. it was my first engagement in work. I was given a Land Rover with no starter. I had my driver's license, but I had no idea. Thick sand and dropping the clutch and all these fun things that we had to do. And and there it was. I ended up, and I just loved it. I just, a bit of adventure, sounded fun to me.
What were you doing in those early days?
My job was basically, I was a very, very much just a happy youngster, just working for food, enjoying it. We'd go to the Guai on a Friday, meet all the, a rough crowd, really, hearts of gold, just, but an interesting, fun time. And and my job was just to do whatever I was told, basically. So helping build the camp.
That was
I was one of the laborers. I learned to speak Ndebele. Did all those things. It was great fun. And then at the end of it, when we built it, they came along and they said, look, there's this thing called being a guide, and his sons were guides in training. And his son-in-law, Gavin Best, who became my tutor and mentor, he was ex-National Parks and was on the examining committee and well-respected for Zimbabwe Professional Hunters Association. So he was already involved in that, but I was clueless. I said to my folks, there's this thing called guiding. He's like, that's what people do on the weekend. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You've had some fun now. You come on.
Yeah, you do game ranging on the weekend. What are you going to do as a real job?
Yeah, what is that? What are you doing? So I was like, no. Said, and, Kaz, interestingly, my folks were like, you should be a mechanic.
Right.
It's like mechanic. And by this time, because we had Series 1s and 2 Land Rovers, I'd already decided that's definitely not what I wanted to do. I'd spend my life fixing those things. And that's how I got into it, to be honest with you. And I was just right place, right time, just very, very, very lucky indeed, actually. And it's been a fun journey. It really has. I've been very, very lucky, actually.
Mm. So, Dave Carson, Kaz Dubé, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We wanted to have this conversation because of the interesting dynamic that ZPGA is, the Zimbabwe Professional Guides Association, that, we don't know for sure, but probably close to a truthful statement that the ZPGA is the only organization in the world that has both consumptive and non-consumptive guides underneath the same umbrella.
Yes, I think you're correct. Correct. It is. Yeah.
Now, I want to sort of roll back history a little bit. When did you become a pro professional guide? When did you run your proficiency test?
So, 95.
95. Yeah. Kaz, you were 2009?
10.
2010. We're 2023. Has it changed?
Yes.
Yeah. Since 1995?
Yes, it has changed in terms of the examination itself?
Well,
or the way we got examined, or the process?
The standard.
No, the standard is very high now.
Do you think the standard's higher now than it was in 1995?
Yes. Yes, it is. And for many reasons. One is, firstly, because access to information.
Okay.
In the old days, we relied very heavily
on getting a packet sent to you and no internet, no nothing.
Oh, there was no plan. Yeah, I got the same packages. Yeah. Exactly. And we also used to write one extra examination in those days. You wrote your learners, and then you wrote what you called the professional hunter and guide exam.
Okay.
So it was a physical exam. Then you went on your proficiency. So that's been taken out of there, there's a few other steps which we've brought in, which make it a much more professional. But it's access to information. The young men and women who are coming up through the association and through this career are they're so much smarter, faster, all that. Their access is just so quick. They learn things so much quicker. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And for us as involved in it, we're learning fast too. It's not like we're being left behind.
Of course.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, I wanted to set this up. You both are professional guides.
Correct.
Yeah. Not professional hunters.
No.
No.
But you have Oh, that's right, because if you're a professional hunter, you hold professional hunter and professional guide's license.
Correct.
Yes. You guys are professional guides, do not hold a professional hunter's license.
That's no. correct.
Okay. So I want people to know that's listening to this, what you do, where you do it, what it looks like. Because it is a very romantic thing that you do. In the grand scheme of people thinking about Africa, what you do in Africa, I think, even hunters, romantically, what you do is it. So I want to just give people a sort of a little glimpse into that. So I'll start with you. You both do very similar things in Wangi.
Yeah.
So Kaz, I'll start with you. What do you have set up in Wangi, and what do you do?
Yes. Yeah, so before I set up that, I didn't get an opportunity to become, to train as a guide practically. From the time I got my learner license in 2001, tourism started going down deeply because of the political situation.
And
Yeah, and then I had to wait for another 5 years to then get apprenticed, mentored in a camp. So I then got my opportunity to actually train in 2006.
Okay.
Despite having started in 1999.
Yeah.
So I then get an opportunity in 2006. I trained for 4 years in the field, in a camp, mentored by different guides. My main mentor was Graham Hingeston, but I worked with other different guides that were very experienced coming into a camp in Manapouz. They mentored me. I learned from them, and then I prepared for my exam. My exam was different to what Dev went through, because we were the generation which started now doing the shooting tests, the interviews.
Yep.
We didn't do the second written exam. So you have the first written one, and then you've got your experience as a guide, as a learner guide, practical experience, and then you then go for your interviews.
And then proficiency.
And then proficiency. So I then got my full license professional guide in 2010, and I was lucky to qualify as the best qualifying
Amazing.
Guide in 2010.
Amazing.
After waiting for 5 years to get opportunity.
And especially from a kid that would run away from elephants that now had to kill an elephant.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Exactly, yeah. So I was fortunate enough to carry on working in Manapouz until after my qualification. I worked there for another 7 years, and then I decided to go on my own. I have since set up my own business called Observe Wildlife.
Observe Wildlife?
That's my company name.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. So I've got a small boutique. I like to call it boutique because it's small and specializes on guiding. Yeah, we specialize on giving people a guided experience. We pride ourselves in interpretation of animal behavior. Mm. For me, guiding is more about the people than the wildlife itself. I like wildlife. I enjoy wildlife. I enjoy everything wildlife, but I enjoy more the people.
Mm.
This is why it's easy for me to share my knowledge of wildlife to the people. I like to see people smiling when they actually learn about what an elephant does, what a lion does.
Mm.
Okay, when we take them on a walking safari, we have been sleeping in a tent, and they've been
surrounded by lions, surrounded by elephants. There's no electric fencing around the camp.
No electric fencing, no generator. My camp doesn't have a generator. So we power our camp using paraffin lamps for lighting around the camp. We use gas stoves, gas fridges, and
it's in a, and we talked about it. It's in a place in Wangi. Nobody else is in there.
Nobody else.
It's your
is
tent.
In there.
You can walk wherever you're going to walk wherever you want. You're going to find tracks, follow tracks.
Yeah. So I'll give you. Recently I was on safari in that camp, and I was guiding people from Australia. First time to Africa, first time on safari, and that night, the whole night, we had during the night an elephant calf being killed by lions.
Oh, jeez.
It was so loud, it went on for a long time, and they could hear it from their tent, right, that night.
Did they not get up in the morning saying, "We are gone"?
In the morning when they came for cordon off breakfast, the husband was saying, I was told when this noise was going on to keep quiet. So anyway, these people now, they've been hearing this, they've been frightened, but it's an experience. And then I have now to take them as a professional guide in Zimbabwe to say to them, right, You felt frightened while in the tent the whole night. Now, what I'm going to do with you is I'm going to now walk you to go and see the pride of lions that just took down an elephant calf. They've never done this before. And it's my job as a guy to calm them down, to tell them it's an experience you're going to enjoy, and trust me. So I carry my firearm, we take our binoculars, I reassure them this is for you to enjoy. We walk into the forest. There we have got a pride of 10 lions, two big males, lionesses and cubs, feeding on an elephant that they had been killed the previous night. And we sat there for 2 hours.
Wow.
They were enjoying it. But my job was first of all to calm them down and to reassure them that yes, there is danger to it, but I'm trained to make sure you enjoy it rather than be fearful of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they sit back in Australia, they're thinking about the experience, they're writing about it on their Facebook pages.
Yeah.
So our job as a guide is to be the link between...
Jeez, what a freaking experience. First time in Africa.
Yeah.
I went to Kruger freaking 25 times as a kid in South Africa and see that.
Yeah.
Lucky buggers. So,
yeah.
Dave, what does your setup look like?
So very similar. Tented camp. We run on very similar, except we have solar. So we've put solar throughout. And again, no generators and all that sort of stuff. But we run it through a big solar system that is the way we run it. But yeah, very similar to what Kaz. But we're in the north. So we're the northern part of the Wangi, which is massive. 14,640 if you want to be... correct, but it's big. So
Like your area is big, or just the Wangi, what's considered North Wangi is
so
big?
What is considered Wangi National Park is big. Okay. So if you take a park as a whole, a lot of people don't realize, you see it on map, you don't realize how big it is. It's an incredible conservation area. So Kaz, to drive to Kaz's camp from my camp will take about 7 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's not distance, it's just roads and all that sort of stuff. So it is quite far. I mean,
it is. I think it's about 200 kilometers. We're about 250 kilometers apart.
Yeah,
but we're in the same park.
Yeah, it's quite far. So for us. But you can combine both. We do very similar things, Kaz. We're very much about... A lot of people, think of East Africa, Botswana, places like that, where, people are a lot more in their vehicles. That's kind of how you do your safari. Here in Zimbabwe, the reason our guides are trained the way they are and come up through a mentorship is because we want them to get out the vehicle. We want to give people experiences on foot. It's all about the experience.
100%.
You asked Kaz about how he felt about Ellie's now that he had been ducking and diving, etc. Yeah. It's interesting when we do our trainings with learners. I always think back to the moment that I was on foot with my first elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And that lovely, it's just a mixture of absolute fear. This is the largest land mammal. These things you hear all the bad stories, of course, and they all flood into your mind. But then the exhilaration, all that.
100% the awe.
Everything, the awe. Yeah. Just the, there it is. And you feel the size of an ant.
Yeah.
And so that never goes away. You know, those big wangy bulls, when they walk up and open their ears and look at you, and then just kindly, big old gentlemen's walk off.
Right.
It's a special moment.
Would you say, are the elephants in your areas, I'll ask this, Dave and Kaz, you can, pretty gentle for the most part? When you, of course.
Yeah, it's how you treat them. Have respect, have the wind right. They're not like, Kaz was talking about mana pools. In mana pools, the Ellies are a lot more used to people because it's a big floodplain area where a lot of people walk. So they're very used to. So I wouldn't say they're tame, but you can get up a lot closer and stuff. So as long as you're respectful and stuff like that, those big bulls especially are so confident in themselves, that you have some special moments. Really special moments out there, with them. And it's also like when you're on foot and you there it is, a herd of buffalo. I mean, everyone hears the bad stories about buffalo, but you got a herd of buffalo and you sneak up and sit around and they come around the mound you're on, and there's special moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, special moments out there. So it's moments on foot that we try and create out there. And obviously we mix drives and walks, but we're very much about tracking all that. Mm-hmm. I actually have a tracker I've worked with for many years, Felix, him and I, we're often out there together, which is great. And so it's very much giving people a very authentic experience, on foot and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's very important to us.
So Kaz, when
you obviously are non-consumptive.
Correct.
When, and you're under the ZPGA umbrella.
Yeah.
You're walking with clients and whatnot, and I don't know, I couldn't even think of a sort of situation, but let's just use elephants, and somebody says, a client says to you, man, I can't believe people hunt elephants. Can you believe that, Kaz, that people hunt elephants?
Yeah.
What does a non-consumptive guide say, given the fact that you guys are, you're one and the same here in Zimbabwe?
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, so it's a very interesting question. People ask us about these questions, and they want to know.
Well, I'll preface it also by saying that I think there is a perception out there, and it's probably warranted in certain parts of the world and certain companies here in Zimbabwe probably, that ecotourism guys, the Land Rover jockeys, the guides, have animosity to the professional hunters and do not see eye to eye in terms of their either one's conservation ethic.
Okay.
I think that's different here.
Right.
I think ZPGA is different in that realm.
Right. I think our role as non-consumptive and consumptive is to educate the world about conservation. Okay. So the world needs to be educated about conservation, in my opinion. Both the non-consumptive and the consumptive. I'm not going to reduce it to guides and this. I'm going to say the world.
Perfect.
We need to understand what we're trying to achieve here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heritage. It's a natural heritage that we have found. And it's a natural heritage that we must leave for other generations. So if both the non-consumptive and the consumptive can achieve a healthy abundance of wildlife in our programs, in our conservation efforts, if we can both achieve that, and if we can both demonstrate to the world that this is what we seek to achieve, to have our conservation efforts are there to make sure there is a healthy, abundant population of wildlife species, and these wild areas are being protected, and the communities living around them are benefiting from it.
Yep.
I think once the world gets an understanding of that, I think probably that animosity or that story against non-hunters and hunters may go away, because everybody will know that this is about conservation. There's funding that's coming from both sectors, which is coming into the ground to protect, to legislate, to make sure wildlife perpetuates, to make sure wildlife doesn't die. Because if you say to someone hunting or poaching, many people don't understand. It's one thing, it leads to death.
Mm-hmm.
It leads to decimation of populations.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if there is a clear demonstration and education to the world to say, guys, the non-consumptive and the consumptive are there to achieve one goal.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy, abundant population of wildlife species and wildlife areas through funding that's generated from both sectors.
Mm-hmm.
This is our goal together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the world will have a different perception, and maybe what we're talking about won't exist.
Dave, do you think the consumptive world has done a terrible job of articulating what Kaz just said?
Sure. That was well said.
Yeah, no, it was like, I was like...
Well, that was really well said. I mean, it's like sitting next to Morgan Freeman here. I could just quietly sit, get lower in my chair. This is cool. In terms of when you say their narrative, you mean?
Yeah,
you
know, I think the perception that we have, like that person that is in, or even the person that's in behind you saying, hunters are terrible.
You know, to be honest with you, I think... so many years ago, we had... after Cecil and all that negative publicity for Zim and all that sort of stuff, we had a workshop at a ZPGA, and they brought in a social media expert who then showed hunters, more the hunting fraternity,
for sure,
just in terms of what the perception is out there and what they're putting out there. And so it was just to educate them in terms of this is what you're doing. You may be working in one of the biggest community areas in the valley, and you know some of the animals that you harvest and hunt, etc. All that money is going back to these communities. This is very much a community project.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that picture that you've put out there
doesn't show that. Right.
So why aren't you showing this? Why aren't you saying, yeah, we're hunters, well, but this is what we're doing?
Because it's not sexy to a hunter to see the community,
So this is the narrative, because this is I live and breathe it, right?
Okay.
The reason why, in my opinion, the consumptive user, the consumptive sector, is in the position we are today, is because our communication of the activity of hunting has solely been on the animal that we take and communicating that animal to our brethren in the consumptive use community.
Yeah.
Before social media.
Yep.
As soon as social media came, our communication style has not changed.
Correct.
Yet we now have avenues to tell our brethren around the world what we do. Well, everyone else's eyeballs are now looking at it going, well, that's all you do.
Correct.
You don't do anything else. Mm. And so, and the struggle and the hurdle we have to get over is you do so much, the community that you just talked about, you do help them.
Correct.
And showing that community benefit is not going to get you 300 likes on Instagram or 500 likes on Instagram. It's going to get you 30. Versus putting up a dead impala is going to get you 500 likes because of the brethren. Mm. Right? And so what's going to help you sell a hunt? The dead impala or the community? The dead impala.
Yeah.
Which is the business you're in. And so now it's almost like we've had, you know, these last 14 days I've been on this. There's a lot. And I feel like the wave has changed. Like the tide has turned. I think a lot of people are talking about what you guys do, which is experience in the consumptive use space. Come see our experience. Come see the sunsets. Come have a champagne sundowner on the top of a koppie. And that's the fourth picture. The fifth picture, oh, by chance, you're going to, these are the quality buffalo we have, and there's a trophy picture of a buffalo. Then it's the ceviche carpaccio, buffalo carpaccio that you're going to eat at dinner that night, and there's a series of 10 photos, of which one is an animal, 9 of which is experience.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. You know, I think everyone could just do a lot better, certainly on the consumptive side, at just telling the story. And just the narrative in terms of what they're really doing. You know, a lot of people doing some great efforts. Some of the hunting areas of Zimbabwe are some of the biggest conservation areas for endangered species.
Yeah.
Black rhino, you know, things like that. There's Booby Valley Conservancy, there's Saab Valley, the incredible conservation happening within those areas. And that story, you know, should be told. And so you talked about, you know, what do we tell a guest?
Yeah.
I think...
Yeah, Kaz was very political in dodging that question.
So, for me, I think there's some folks who won't understand it. But it's important that, that you know, you explain it. It's very important to explain this is what it is. We, you know, as guides in Zimbabwe, and yes, we are affiliated with our hunting brothers, you know, we come up through the same system. There is a hunting component to our guiding exam. There's a hunting, there's a lot of hunting we got to do before we, you know, you do not want to get out and walk and lead people on safari and you have not had dangerous experiences.
So let me ask this. That's a very good point. I just want to, I'll come back to what you were alluding to. Is there in any other country in South Africa for field guides, I'm going to exclude the trail guides of Kruger for a second.
Yes, okay. Oh, no, they're specialized.
But any other guide in Africa that does walking safaris, are they mandated to take a big game animal, elephant, buffalo, and one of the cats? I don't know. I know you guys don't have to do cats. Is there anyone else who's mandated to say, look, you're going to be in a position, hopefully never.
Yeah.
But if you get in the position, you have done this already.
No. There's to our knowledge, to my knowledge, there's no other country in Africa, in the world, that does anything like what we do. We have a system that we believe is tried and tested. It produces really good guides and hunters. And when I talk about guides, I'm talking about both sides.
Yeah.
And I believe we have a fantastic standard. That's not to say they aren't phenomenal walking guides in Zambia, those areas. We have massive respect for.
We're just to the exam.
To the exam, yeah. So just sticking to your point, sorry, is that no, there's no one else out there. And we have, you know, we do get a lot of pressure. You know, people will say, you know, why are you still doing that? Because we genuinely we believe that if we're going to have people, you know, doing these activities, we want them
well
trained. Well,
if I was, hopefully one day, we've talked about it already, I'd love to bring my boys and my wife to do something like that. Yeah. You know, I would want to know. Like, if I did my research, like, okay, let's see what this. I would want to know that my guide has already been in that situation. Like, if an elephant decides to get, like, this is it, my guide's been there, done that already. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, it clears my conscience a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit like, when you learn to fly a plane, they take you out there. There'll be times where they'll be like, okay, switching the engines off. They put
Correct.
You in a, they put you in a spin.
Yep.
They teach you that while you're with the instructor.
Mm-hmm.
You're there.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing those things. So when it happens with guests or, you know, you have passengers, you are fully cool and calm.
Yeah.
Does it always end? You're well-trained.
You're well-trained.
Yeah.
We believe in the training. We genuinely believe in the training. There's no issue there with us on that at all.
So again, I want to be completely honest here. If that guest asks about hunting.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it's terrible. Do you shy away from it?
No, we don't shy away from it because I believe people should make informed decisions. You know, we can have a discussion with someone, and if they still feel the hunting is not for them, that's fine.
Mm.
I've got no issue with that. But have an informed decision. Don't make an opinion on something you know just enough to be dangerous on. Mm. You know, just listen for a moment.
Mm.
Don't just arrive negative. You know, I don't like hunting because they've seen those pictures of dead elephants. People don't like pictures of dead elephants. To be honest with you, I love seeing live elephants personally.
Sure.
It is what it is. But the point is, if we understand the benefits, and genuine benefits.
Genuine.
Now, we're talking about massive conservation efforts that are happening, we're totally for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll have the discussion and just lay out the facts, not the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Just stay away from emotion and stick to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
The facts are there are communities benefiting.
Mm-hmm.
The facts are there's conservation happening. All those things are happening. Are they happening everywhere? No,
mm-hmm.
not everywhere. But you can allude to those areas where this could be done better, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So yeah.
Kaz, do you feel like maybe I'll get your opinion, but I want almost your opinion of the greater community. I can see in that situation a guide. Because you're walking with someone that's paying you, that potentially there's a tip at the end of the day, end of the trip, almost agreeing with them and saying, yeah, you're right, you know, hunting's terrible.
No, quite often when guests ask about that and you tell them that it's about safety, it's about their safety because these animals are dangerous animals. And as a guide, I need to be well trained for a situation where I need to destroy the animal because it's now about life and limb.
Mm-hmm.
So once I explain that to them, I get this question, but usually when I explain it, I have not seen any guests becoming unhappy that we have to hunt to become professional guides.
Do they get upset? I'll rephrase the question. Do they get upset if you take a stance that is, I won't say pro-hunting, but I'll say okay with hunting?
Again, it's how you explain it. If I told them, because the fear is the population. People take hunting and poaching as
the same thing.
Decimating population.
Correct.
So that's where the fear is.
Correct.
But once people understand that, guys, what's happening in the consumptive and the non-consumptive both seeks to protect and to get these
as the same goal
is the same goal.
Yeah.
Once people understand that, they may have a position that they don't like hunting, but once they understand that, they're not going to be to like hunting, but at least they've got some peace. They understand. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Maybe they haven't heard about it. Now you're explaining to them that no. This is all about protection, the perpetuation of wildlife. Then they won't become pro hunters, but they will understand what hunting.
What Dave said. You said it so well. Like what I say is, a vegan, not a radical vegan, but a vegan who's doing it for the right reasons, and a hunter.
Yeah.
If you sat them down on the couch And he said, why do you do what you do?
Yeah.
Vegan.
Yeah.
Is it for healthy wildlife? Is it for better wildlife? Is it for sustained wildlife for your kids and your grandkids one day? More often than not, I think the answer is going to be yes.
Yeah.
Then you ask the hunter, why do you hunt? Do you want to see more wildlife? Yes. Do you want to see healthier wildlife? Yes. Do you want to have wildlife sustained for your kids and your grandkids one day? Yes. Well, you both just answered the same thing, the same way.
Yeah.
You just have two different tools about going about wildlife conservation.
Right.
And that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Non-consumptive and consumptive are two different tools that both can be used for the single purpose of wildlife conservation.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can. And I think it's just important that...
Do you think Zimbabwe's got that model licked?
I think we're getting better at it, to be honest with you. And like you said, the narrative coming out of the consumptive side, the hunting side, they're starting to understand that they need to actually show the full picture.
Yeah.
You know, you need to show your whole picture. Your whole picture is conservation. So you can preach conservation, but now show us.
Yeah,
show us. What is your conservation?
Prove it.
Yeah. Just prove that.
Yeah. Prove it.
And in, you know, 9 times out of 10, they 100% can, you know. They can prove it. And as long as they can prove it, you, like I say, I mean, everyone's got their own decisions on this sort of thing, but it's very important that you understand the facts.
Yeah.
Understand the facts. And also, I think there's one thing that people forget. Wildlife must pay its way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They need to understand that. Mm. Now, every photographic guest that comes wants to go to the best areas, wants to tick off certain animals, wants to have certain experiences with all of us and things like that. Now, there are areas which become like buffer zones around national parks, around wildlife areas, all those sort of things, that photographics are not going to go there because they, you know, in many cases, it's the terrain, it's whatever it is there. It's not conducive to photographics.
You're not going to get the experiences you're looking for.
You're not getting the experiences, and it's so difficult to get people to go to those areas, you know, remote, all those sort of things. But there's a hunter. He's got 12 guests a year, whatever. He's out there working with the community every day. He's doing his thing. And genuinely, I'm talking about working with communities, proper communities, you know, out there, rural communities who are so thankful, you know, for the help they're getting and all that sort of stuff. You know, I don't have issues with that at all. And I think if that's explained and that narrative is put out there properly and correctly, look, there's people that are going to try and shoot holes in it and do all that sort of thing. Like I say, everyone's allowed their opinion.
Yeah.
You know, we're very happy with that. But, you know, we on the ground believe in many cases we're doing a great, you know, a good job, and our across the aisle, our consumptive partners in ZPJ, you know, they're doing a good job. We have an ethics committee, and you know, people are held to book, and it's a good thing from both sides. It's very important. So, you know, I think we all talk with a similar voice on these things.
Kaz, you agree?
I agree 100%. Yeah.
And the reason I said it, like, you know, is the model, because you have it. ZPGA is the model.
Yes.
Correct.
When everyone comes out of the end of that funnel,
correct,
they believe in what you just said.
Yeah.
They are trained in what you just said.
Yeah.
Non-consumptive and consumptive is exactly the same. We're doing the same things. Yeah. We've been trained the same way. We believe in the same ethic.
Yeah.
We have two different tools that we've decided to use, but we are the same.
Yeah.
After the end of the funnel, you hope that the ethos stays along those same tracks. Naturally, pressures, jobs, companies, opinions, you know, tips, all influence the narrative that then sort of starts separating a little bit.
You know, we're very lucky here. At ZPJ, we chatted about it yesterday in the meetings. You heard how we talk about, you know, with national parks, our partnership with them is incredible. We are so, you know, the partnership is so close. So when people start their training and come through all our trainings and become a professional guide or professional hunter, there's a pride I can't explain.
Yeah.
You know, when someone gets their license, you can't believe how proud we are, firstly, of them passing.
Sure.
And secondly, they feel it. Like, they that is... It's something special.
Well, that's the standard that you guys have created.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a dream. You know, as a youngster, when you get into the system, you're looking 4 years ahead, 5 years ahead, depending on where you're coming from. It's not a time thing. You know, just everyone has a different journey. But you're looking and you want to be there. You know, you want to be one of them.
Well, and it's also, I think that pride comes with the fact that you don't write your exam. 5 days later, you write, you do a shooting course, and here you are. Here's your certificate.
Yeah, no.
It's
no,
a, like, it's an achievement to get through. That's why you guys have 500 come in the front door, and you have five come out the back door.
Yes.
It's exactly what happens. But also, it's a, you know, a lot of sacrifice. You know, there's guys out there that are sacrificing, like, you can't believe. Some have got young families. Some are, you know, they're just sacrificing big time. And then they'll get there. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. It really is. And so we talk about, you know, guys falling off and the narrative changing and things like that. I think that can only really happen if you have, you know, people come in from outside and things like that and influence them in some way or something like that. You know, a company that buys in or something like that to the company they're working for, and might, their narrative is, we are totally anti-hunting.
Yeah.
We don't want to even talk about it. They don't want to have the conversation. Like I keep saying, I mean, everyone should have their own opinion, but just base it on fact. That's all we ask.
I'll ask this last question. In your opinions, I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you. In your opinions, as a non-consumptive guide, should you be pro or should you be anti-hunting?
We're pro hunting, you know. We're pro hunting if it's done ethically, under good conservation, and nowadays, just like non-consumptive, you know, the community engagement is so important. You know, to us, it's just so important. So I believe if you if the guys are doing all those things right, then yeah, we're pro it. You know, we are.
Yes.
So legal, regulated hunting with a focus to fund conservation and benefit communities, definitely.
Definitely pro.
Definitely pro.
Yeah. But does that mean we're going to run out there with flags and all that sort of stuff? Yeah, no, probably not. But the narrative, we will give the facts.
Sure.
They are.
We
aren't hiding behind them.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who comes to Zim are going to understand that, you know, we have gone through these systems. And yes, there's people going to be shy away from this and go, hey, oh, these Zim guides, oh, I've heard what they do. You know, I've heard what they're doing. And there'll be people out there who will be like, okay, you heard what these Zimbabweans do. You know, you know, so rather come to our country, you know, because these guys are, but that's not right. It's just not right. We're well prepared to give them amazing experiences. Yep. And our counterparts, on the consumptive side, the hunting side, are just as, you know, equipped. And they're doing, you know, that in most areas they're doing a great job. You know, so you know we are behind them.
Yeah,
we are, and that's why we are one organization.
100%.
And that's by law also. You know, it's not just we woke up and decided to do that. It's by law. We're engaged with each other. So it's it's a little different to everyone else, and you know, we're not asking everyone to be like us. But we believe our system works, and that's the standard, and we're going to keep that standard.
Well said. I'll start with Kaz. Kaz, where can people find information about Observe Safaris?
Observe Wildlife.
Observe Wildlife. Sorry, I got it wrong.
Yeah, we have got a website, observewildlife.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They can find you. They can understand everything that you do there.
Yes.
Observe Wildlife book. Can they book straight through the website?
Yes, they can send us emails through the website.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. So Wangi National Park.
Wangi National Park, observewildlife.com.
Okay.
Yes. Or you can just Google Kaz Dube.
Kaz Dube. You're that popular that you just put your name in Google?
I'm on Facebook, and so it probably will pop up on Facebook, yeah.
Are you sure no pictures are going to show up on Google when they put Kaz Dube in there?
They will.
Oh, yeah, good pictures.
Yeah.
Good. Dave, where can they find you?
Yeah, I know. We're Kazuma Trails or Wangi Bush Camp.
Kazuma, how do you spell Kazuma?
K-A-Z-U-M-A.
K-A-Z-U-M-A.
Yes, Kazuma Trails. I used to go to Kazuma Park, Kazuma, a lot, and just I love the name, I love the area, it's wild, it's all those things. Anyway, you can find us on our website, all good there, and there's a lot of great tour operators out there that, you know, book us and stuff like
Sweet.
That.
Sweet, KazumaTrails.com.
Happy days.
Observewildlife.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, no drama.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Rob.
Well, that's it for today. I appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night, floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop, and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.